Hello, and welcome to episode 234 of Checkpoint Chat. Had to think there for a moment again. My name is Alessandro Barbosa. I'm joined by Matthew Figuera.
It's the counting episode. Kitchen. We've waited. Oh, yeah, sorry. We've readjusted our apartment, and this is where I live now. I live in the kitchen.
Oh, okay.
To be fair, if you watched any episodes like 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was just like 2 meters, if
just,
that
just
way.
Just to your right, I guess, I'm going to assume.
Yeah, so I need to figure out, because I mean, I don't want you guys to look in my kitchen. It's beautiful.
If you reach back long enough, can you like grab a snack?
That's way too far.
I don't know. That camera angle makes your arm look very long.
Let me just grab
I mean, I know you've got wingspan, but maybe it's a bit much.
No, my place isn't that small. But I do need to
figure
out.
One day you're going to do that, reach back, and Menska's going to be there. She's just going to hand you like a banana or something.
I mean, I'd love that. No, so as we know, in the COVID era of Zoom and Teams calls, where people figured out how to blur their backgrounds, very standard feature in those applications. But when it comes to OBS, you need to install fancy ass filters and effects, and it's not something I can just do in 5 minutes. There's no like instance.
OBS is like, you're a streamer. Why would you want to blur your beautiful face?
No, well, I'm like, look, I don't think there's anything wrong with the background, but it's more for Lenska. Like, she can come use the kitchen, but then she's just going to be like in the camera, and it's not really ideal.
This is your chance to finally, I would say expense, but we don't have an expense department, so I cannot
a green screen.
But expense a green screen.
Where would I put a green screen? Okay, I can literally look kitchen table.
You could just hang it from the ceiling.
Oh my god! In the middle of the
just
room.
Like a cloak. Like, you actually just like cover your monitor like with one half, and then the other half goes over your head, and you've just like made a little fort.
Listen, since we've made the comeback, I won't end the podcast, not this time. But this little thing here, I don't know how to get rid of it. I need to problem solve that off recording sometime. But it really frustrates me that it never existed before, because I went back and I looked. I was like, well, why is it there now? It didn't exist
just
before.
Please don't hit end call
not this time.
My God. I did enjoy your little video of that, because I never got to hear the other side of that. And you're very candid. Oh, no. It's a very like Winnie the Pooh-esque, like, oh, bother, I fucked up. Like,
it is one of those things where, you know, when your brain knows what's going on, but your body's just like, I'm going to click
one
this
step
button.
Ahead.
Yeah, so I'm like, I even read this, I'm like, end call. And in my head, I'm like, no. And my finger's like, yes. End of the call. And I clicked it. I was like, oh, no.
Absolutely.
Let's just do this. Let's just see what this does. Yeah, it was.
Let's live a little. Yeah.
It was the best of times and the worst of times. We danced, we cried, we spoke awkwardly.
Could have seen my face on the other end of that, because I was just like shaking my head. I was like, I can't believe he pressed a button that said that while recording.
Again,
just
for
ridiculous.
What it's worth, my brain was like, no, don't do that. A hand. Like, yes, this is a party I want to attend. I will RSVP.
Yeah. I guess sorry for missing last week. It was
happy Rosh Hashanah. Well, happy late Rosh Hashanah.
Shana Tova to all who celebrated last week. Yeah, it was Jewish New Year essentially. So I was attending shul for most of the weekend, so there was just zero chance of us recording.
You don't take your switch to shul.
I think that would be highly frowned upon.
I think any religious.
But I think collectively, Sean and I were there for probably 8 hours in the span of 48 hours.
Sure,
it was a lot. Mm. It was a lot.
Damn, Daniel.
But it was good. We got to eat really good food.
Nice.
Had a good time. So yeah, that's why there was no recording last week. But that is now done. There probably won't be any more of those for the rest of the year. So, I mean, I hope, unless I'm forgetting something.
No.
And then I was sick this week, which is great.
You survived. You're alive.
Jeez. My goodness. There's some weird... Be glad you aren't in Johannesburg, Matthew. There's some bug doing the rounds, and it absolutely ate me alive for 24 hours. It was great.
So I don't know what you have, but something has been absolutely destroying my team in Johannesburg. Like, I think last week there were 4 or 5 people off. And now they're in the office and there's another 4 or 5 people. It's just like...
This is exactly why I chose to work from home yesterday, because I was like, I don't know how contagious I still am. I don't want this to like spread through my office. But it was like a classic, you know, like complete like stomach issues, throwing up, all sorts for like 24 hours. It was great. Yeah.
I hate
probably
that.
Shed like 5 kilos in water weight. It was awesome.
That is the worst. Those bugs just, I hate them. I have nothing more to say in the matter other than...
You can't eat, you can't do anything, yeah. Hey, but hey, you come out looking shredded after that, so it's great.
I was like, whoa, do you hit the gym?
What a transformation, damn.
What is your secret?
All you have to do is lie in bed and throw up your lungs every 30 minutes and you too can have these abs.
So it's definitely, do you think it's something you ate or it's definitely a bug going around?
At first I thought it was something I ate, but then afterwards I was getting like you know, if you eat something bad,
yeah,
it doesn't last that long. Like, it gets out your system and that's that. This lasted a full day, so there was no way.
Yeah.
And then I just started getting all sorts of other sick.
Do you know?
And then when I mentioned it to someone, they were like, oh yeah, no, someone else I know has that. I was like, okay, yeah, fuck.
Who's patient zero?
Yeah, exactly.
Figure this
Find
out.
Them.
Do you know when you're going to have a day like that? Like, do you know, can you feel that something's not right before? And I'll explain why I'm asking this.
I think in this case, I was lucky because lucky is a very strong word. But it happened during the night. So
you wouldn't know.
From midnight, I was up.
I know.
And that pretty much told me I wasn't going to work that day. I have had it before where I was at school, where it's like midway through the day.
Oh, no.
It starts. And that is horrendous because you don't know what to do. You are trapped.
You're in class. You're like, please... Mr.
Please, can I go
teacher,
to the bathroom again?
The bathroom?
I know it's been only 30 seconds. Yeah.
Just want to go smoke on the
coffee. That's not great.
Like, I don't even smoke.
Have you ended up at work like this before?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
But the reason I ask is that I don't know if this is weird or normal, but I now know if something's not right to my tummy, like hours before, because I can taste it. Like, I've identified.
Oh, interesting.
There's a specific, very specific kind of taste. And if I can, like if I burp, for example, I know and I'm like, oh, like something's not right. And I know exactly what it is. I'm like, shit. Like, if I taste it in the evening, for example, I'm like, oh, I'm going to be up tonight. And I promise you, like, 10 out of 10 times that taste is like an indicator, like something's not right in my stomach. So I don't know, like it's something I figured out. I'm like, is it normal?
That's a kind of amazing superpower, I won't lie.
It's probably the shit's a superpower. Like, what can you do? Like, what? I can tell you in advance when I'm going to shit my pants.
Listen, I'd rather take that than you only being able to tell once you've shit your pants.
I mean, fair. Fair, fair, fair.
If you can retain that superpower into your old age, tell you, people will be envious.
My carers will be like, oh, thank God, I've got this
guy. Yeah, thank God.
Taste in advance, superhero man. I like your mouth.
Eats your little oatmeal and you just like, and they're like, oh no, oh no.
I don't know. It's weird. It's something I figured out a couple of years ago, and I've been spot on every time, and it's actually quite terrifying because I know then, which makes it worse. I climb into bed going
I guess knowing, it's like you taste that and you
later.
Just know what's coming. Yeah.
I'll be up later. It's cool. I'm going to barely sleep. It's cool. Well, I'm glad you're feeling better though.
Yeah. Feeling more human. I'm glad because there's not much you can do in that situation. You just lay in bed and wait.
You just cry.
Yeah. You just... like pray for the pain to go away.
1 kilo is being shed in the loo. The other 4 kilos is coming through your eyeballs, that liquid.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Hate to see it.
On that note, You know what else assaults your eyeballs? I don't know.
You know what else is salty? Gaming. There we go. Nailed it.
Video games. It's Checkpoint Chat to talk about video games. Often. Not this. Often.
If this is your first episode, we are so sorry that this is the introduction.
I'm so sorry. Bodily fluids are abound in Mortal Kombat 1.
Oh my god. Nailed there it. Are many, many, many fluids.
Just most of happening. It blood.
There's so many.
Don't get excited. This is still Mortal Kombat. It's still a fighting game. It's still about blood.
It's, yeah. Sorry, I'm just getting the footage up.
This is fun. I'm frantically watching Matthew's mouse like navigate OBS. It's like watching this in real time.
That's so funny because you can see Mortal Kombat 1. So for those of Mortal you who don't Kombat know, 1. The Mortal Kombat timeline is very confusing, okay? Because you might be thinking, didn't they do a franchise reboot in Mortal Kombat 9? And you'd be right. We had Mortal Kombat 9, 10, and 11. And hey, we've gone back to 1. Before we carry on, though, I want to let you know that I read up on the lore of the game. And there was no Mortal Kombat 8, it doesn't seem. I don't know, maybe I misunderstood or something. But I was like, that's weird. They just skipped straight over to 9.
Wasn't Armageddon technically 8?
I thought that was 7. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe it is. There's so many spin-offs that contribute to the story as well.
Mortal Kombat 1 is a proper hardcore timeline, everything refresh. So at the end of 11, old Liu Kang beats the antagonist of that game called Kronika, who, for just to simplify it, was the Keeper of Time. Fast forward, he's now the Keeper of Time with godly powers, and he basically reset the timeline to, like, I don't know, make it a better place. But spoiler, people still fight in this timeline.
It's the same shit.
It's exactly the same. People out here fighting, you know, conducting fatalities, doing all sorts of things.
His reasoning is kind of interesting. Is like, he kind of explains that he had to keep things the same, but he's taken out certain characters. So that there's a mutual understanding between all the realms. Like at the beginning of this game, Earthrealm, which is like technically Earth, and Outworld, which is where all the bad guys traditionally come from, they kind of, you know, they're rivals. He makes a good point. They're rivals, not enemies.
Yes.
They respect each other, but they show each other strength, but they're not like out here to invade and fuck each other up. Like they kind of travel between each other peacefully, which is an interesting dynamic. But obviously that dynamic isn't foretold to like stay like that for long. I don't know. So he takes out key figures that are dangerous to his timeline. And the story quickly establishes those as like Shang Tsung and Quan Chi.
Mm.
But he keeps Shao Kahn around?
Yeah, just chilling there.
very close to the action.
And this isn't a spoiler. Just there. Shao Kahn in this game is General Shao, so it's like, I presume what he did before, you know, he became Shao Kahn. But yeah, he's just there, looking all menacing, basically threatening war. Everyone's like, you know, what's he gonna do?
The moment you see him, you're like, this fucker's going to overthrow people and start a war. Like, it's not even. I just don't understand why he's still there, but
I don't know.
But anyway, I think the opening hours of the story are a bit annoying because it's like we literally just reestablished these characters and now we're doing it again. Like we are seeing Liu Kang and former Thunder God Raiden, who is basically just a stand-in now for Liu Kang.
Yeah, they've just swapped.
We're seeing them training. We're seeing Johnny Cage. Become like friends with all of these other fighters after his acting career goes down the toilet. You see Kenshi introduced by some weird happenstance, like, and it takes a long time for things to like start like clicking into place, and for the kind of like cracks in Liu Kang's like overall plan to start forming. I think we're around the same place and we're about like halfway.
We're on chapter 8 and I think there's 16 if I'm not mistaken. So we are halfway. Yeah.
I think it's so the structure is fairly similar to the previous games. It's like you play three or four fights. with each character, and then you move on. And there's quite lengthy cutscenes between each of the chapters now. I think they look really good. And I'm like engaged in the story. I think the fighting is really fun. I'm not a huge fighting game person, like in terms of like, I'm not really good at them. I've played all of the Mortal Kombat story modes since 9, because I think they're just a really easy way for people to get into fighting games, because I like stories. And I'm finding this one very easy, but at the same time, incredibly satisfying. Like the fighting feels very good. The combos feel really good and punchy. So I don't know. Do you?
Pun intended. I like the. So yeah, just to briefly, I suppose, to confirm what you said. Like, I'm also enjoying the story. I think since Mortal Kombat 9, if you acknowledge that, you know, you're going to play through a story, albeit a ridiculous story, you're going to have a good time. Because, you know, from the get-go, this world is silly. And I think they do sometimes intentionally lean into, you know, how absurd some of this stuff is. And it's entertaining to play through. Like, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Mortal Kombat 9 was sort of a defining moment in fighting games where it's like, oh, you know, you can have basically a whole movie play out punctuated by fight scenes with different characters that, you know, gamers can play through. And it's just a very cool way to go through a story. Even if some of those fights are ridiculous, where it's like, my favorite is in all of these games, there's any excuse for a fight. Like, it happens all the time where it's like, oh, what did you say about my mom? And then it's a fight, for example. Okay, it's not that ridiculous. And then you'll beat that person. Close. And then their friend who will also have been in the cutscene, they'll be like, I can't believe you said that about his mom. And then you fight that person. there's a lot of that in this game. But if you acknowledge that it is silly in many places, I think you'll have a great time. And the fighting itself, yeah, I'm very much the same as you, where I'm not a huge fighting game fan. Like, I've played a lot of fighting games over the years. I'm not particularly good at them. I do love Mortal Kombat. I think it's very, very easy and palatable for newcomers. Because, I mean, the combos themselves generally aren't too complicated. Like, you can do a move as simple as, like, down, forward, punch. Like, chances are you could go through all of the buttons doing those simple combos and you'll figure out a move. But I think what they've done in this game, which is very cool, is that they've got, is it the cameo system? Is that what it's called?
Yes.
So if you're watching the footage, this particular part of the story doesn't have it, but in the base game, you can have a second fighter who's off camera, but you can call them into the fight with a simple button press. Like, you literally push R1 and you pair it with the direction, they'll come in and they'll do a move for you. So you don't even have to memorize combos. You know, if you're a newcomer, you can still do very cool stuff. And I think it's just a very clever way to sort of bring newcomers and hardcore fans. No, it won't level the playing field, obviously. But the thing is, like, if you're a newcomer, you can do cool moves. If you're a hardcore fan, you can now include these easy moves into your already existing combos and other move sets. And I'm sure you've seen online already the level of combos that people are pulling off. It's just very cool to see them strung together. Yeah. It's I don't know. I can't tell you, like, oh, it's the fighting's looser or tighter than 9, 10, 11, because I just don't know this game so well enough. Like, I've played through their stories, but I can tell you that I am enjoying this system that they've got here. Whether it be better or worse, I can't quite tell you. But yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I'm in the same boat. I can't tell you from a very detailed quality standpoint whether the fighting at a technical level is better or worse. I just know how it feels to me.
Yeah.
And I can definitely say I'm having more fun with this than I did Mortal Kombat 11. Like, I played and enjoyed Mortal Kombat 11. I found the story mode very uneven and I just never clicked with the fighting there in the same way that I did with 9 and 10. This one I've immediately like picked up. I found the combos like really satisfying to pull off. I find the character changes quite subtle and interesting. Like, Raiden still has his, you know, specific moves, but there's some changes. Like, his you know, his like leap forward with the electricity, he does a little jump in the air now and then dives down, as opposed to it being horizontal, which is an interesting change. Like stuff like that is pretty cool to note. And I mean, I'm still experimenting with all the player, all the characters. I think so far my favorites to play as have been Raiden for sure. I just think he feels really good.
Yeah.
And Baraka was like really fun to play as. Baraka's good, actually. And yeah, there's just some cool stories I think that they're telling with this new timeline. Like I'm kind of bummed that they have to start a new timeline again to do this, but at the same time, the antagonists seem to be very similar to the ones prior. So it's like, I don't think this is actually a really good jumping on point if you haven't played the previous games or aren't familiar with their stories, because they depend heavily on what has happened there.
Yeah.
They don't fully explain what the hell's happened before.
I think the nuance will just be lost on you.
Probably, yeah. Like you could still get in on this one, but you won't understand when like certain characters appear, like why they are appearing and stuff like that. But yeah, it's like you said, it's a fun, hokey like story mode, and I don't think it's any different to the previous games in terms of like its balance of seriousness and stupidity, which I always enjoyed. I think they're quite endearing.
I'm there for it. I mean, I think the wrong kind of gamer, for example, think Johnny Cage is like insufferable, which he is. He's 100%.
Oh, he's great in this game.
Yeah, but he's like, it's by design, and I really enjoy that they've given him, like I said to you before we started recording, like I'm surprised that he has as much screen time as he does.
Yeah.
But I'm really enjoying the comedic relief like he's providing into, you know, these otherwise very serious affairs going on in this guy.
He's just like, his transformation from like Hollywood star to like 2 or 3 months later, he's like special ops for Earthrealm. It's just fucking ridiculous. It's so funny. And he just takes it on the chin, and he's still thinking about movies at the end of the day. It's so funny. It's so good.
It's
real fun. Voice acting's real. Shang Tsung's voice actor is really commanding and really good. Really enjoyed. I really like the changes they've made to like Baraka and his lineage and sort of the story around Melina. I'm very keen to get to the Lin Kuei, because I've only got to see Scorpion and Sub-Zero at the beginning, briefly, and they've kind of disappeared since then. But I've heard that Scorpion's story is really, really
good. It's good, yeah.
I'm having a great time with it. And like I said, I didn't vibe with Mortal Kombat 11 as much as I thought I would, and I'm definitely enjoying this a lot more. So I'm keen to keep playing this for quite a while.
Yeah, likewise. And you just, before we bounce off, visually as well, I think the game looks great.
It looks fantastic.
It's actually amazing. And I think back to, I mean, because Mortal Kombat's a long, long running franchise. Like if you want to feel old, I mean, I feel old. I remember playing Mortal Kombat 1 in arcade machines. That was over 30 years ago. Or about 30 years ago.
Ages ago, yeah.
And I think of what, not even just Mortal Kombat, what fighting games look like back then versus what they look like today. It's unreal, the level of detail. I mean, because like most fighting games just happen on a 2D plane, you know. But the level of detail in the backgrounds, and even just the animations in that, it's amazing. Like, I think,
and the transitions from cutscene to fight are really good.
It's amazing. Like, I think modern day fighting games are looking real good. Yeah,
I've been watching Jeff Grubb from Giant Bomb's been going through Mortal Kombat 9 to like 11 story in anticipation for Mortal Kombat 1. So it's been a good series to watch just to kind of refamiliarize myself with the story, but also like,
visually.
Wow, those games visually aged. Like Mortal Kombat 9 still, I think, looks good because it's more stylish. X and 11 went far more realistic, so they look way worse by comparison. Yeah. But even 11 just looks old now. Like when you look at Mortal Kombat 1, it is, it's drastically, drastically different.
Well, 11 was last gen, right? This is like their first.
11 was last gen, yeah. This is the first current gen. Let's not talk about Switch because that is a whole other thing.
Can outright tell you though, do not play this game on Switch.
Yeah, do not play this game on Switch.
And it, just awful, awful ports of the game. or other platforms, though, you're in for a good time.
PC apparently is a bit wonky, but I mean, that's always been the case with Mortal Kombat on PC. So
I'm shocked to hear that.
The Switch is bad, though. Hey, like that is almost an unforgivable port. You know what I mean?
No.
It looks, some of the comparisons there are really, really bad. But hey, on consoles, looks fucking fantastic and runs great and sounds great. It's got really good sound design as well.
Those. I mean, if you have no intention of playing Mortal Kombat, but you just want to hear the sound, go watch any of the millions of fatality combination videos going around. Good. Yeah. Anytime I open up Instagram or whatever, it's the IGNs and the GameSpots, like, here are 5 more fatalities. Like, oh my God. And I will watch them.
I'm waiting for the first moment in the story where you get to do one, because I know in previous stories you were able to. I do like that they only allow you to do those. So they changed the X-ray moves slightly, where it wasn't like a, so previously you had to have like your whole bar filled and then you could just do an X-ray move whenever. Now it's sort of like if you're losing, you get access to what they call a fatal blow. I think it's when you're down to like the last third of your health.
30% health or lower.
That's your X-ray move. And if you miss it, you have to wait for a while for it to recharge, type of thing. It's not based on your meter on the bottom. I think that's a cool mechanic, although I do find myself using it far less now because like if you are winning a match, you're not going to do it. Oh, exactly.
You know? No, but I've had the same thing.
But also
thing.
Like they take so much health that if it's close, it's like whoever pulls off that move first kind of wins. So I don't know, it's a bit weird. It's cool how the cameo characters are integrated into those moves. And it's cool that in the story you're only given access to those moves when you're playing a match that isn't like very antagonistic. So you saw when previously you were playing with Raiden and Kung Lao, they didn't have access to their, it's like you don't want to fuck that dude up.
So it is, it's cool little contextual things like that, which are cool.
You're not gonna electrocute this guy's skull to death when you're just sparring with him, you know?
This is Mortal Kombat. Are we playing the same? I'm very keen to keep playing. Again, like I enjoy these stories as silly as they are. They are very fun to play through. I'm very keen to. I haven't tried online yet, but I will definitely give it a crack. See what's up there.
Yeah.
Cool.
Cool. Mortal Kombat 1. It's good.
Mortal Kombat.
Turns out NetherRealm still knows how to make a good fighting game.
Mm-hmm.
Shook.
Get out. But you've been playing something else. Oh. Nailed it. You've been playing a little something else this week. I know you maybe touched briefly. With Cyberpunk 2.0.
Cyberpunk 2077, the big expansion, or its only expansion, what's it called? The Phantom Liberty, I think it's called. It's out next week on September 26th, so like a day after this is out. But prior to that, CD Projekt Red dropped the 2.0 update for everyone who owns the game on console and PC. And this is this sort of update that has, like, I think the meat of what the expansion has to offer, because it is the redefinition of what Cyberpunk 2077 is. It comes with the whole new, like, perk system, which is meant to allow you to, as you upgrade your V, you'll upgrade perks that are more active as opposed to just passive stat boosts. It comes with changes to like the police system. It comes with changes to how the open world functions and works. It's very from the ground changes that are meant to elevate the Phantom Liberty, which itself just offers like more missions and story and more weapons. So like those are very, I don't want to say basic additions, but they are like what you'd expect from an expansion. 2.0 updates are more like system level fundamental changes that you shouldn't, in my opinion, have to pay for. And it's good that CD Projekt Red tends to agree. And if you looked at any reviews for the Phantom Liberty, which included thoughts on 2.0, you'll get the sense that the sentiment now is that Cyberpunk 2077 is very much the game that it not only should have been at launch, but what was advertised a lot prior to launch, like in terms of the depth of role playing and the depth of the world and the reactivity of the world and how you can play in all these different ways. So I've only briefly started messing with that. The developer suggests you start a new game with these changes, and I can kind of see why, because like the entire system for role playing is different. I don't actually know how they deal with like letting you restructure that from an existing playthrough, but I can understand why they want you to go from the beginning, because I think there's a lot from a fundamental level that you need to relearn. That will change the way you approach how you play this game now.
Yes.
So I've played the opening for like the fifth time in my life now. I think the opening's still pretty good.
What background did you choose?
It doesn't really. I chose Nomad because the backgrounds are still like so fucking surface level, and that still kind of irritates me. But like, it takes like 20 minutes, and you're with Jackie Wells, and you're in the exact same spot as all the other two like backgrounds. So like, it doesn't really change much. So I haven't really got the chance to delve deep into the role playing changes. I will say though that on PC at least, the game looks pretty phenomenal. They've made like some substantial changes to the way it looks, to its ray tracing. They've got that really ridiculously overkill ray tracing path tracing mode that you can enable, and with that good you luck. Can if you're on an NVIDIA card, you can use a new feature called ray reconstruction, which is meant to make the ray tracing look a bit better, like less noisy and whatever. But it like, unless you've got a 40 series card, you're pretty much struggling to run that mode at all. But it's still, I think it looks really, really good. I don't know if they made some significant changes to how things work, but it looks different to me. Like it looks like an improvement. And I'm kind of keen that I never got around to finishing 2077 now, because like, I just never clicked with it. And a big part of it was I just felt like I wasn't role playing. I was just going through the motions as V. And a lot of what this update has been like describing over the months as CD Projekt Red has been detailing it has got me really excited to give the game a go again, because it reminds me of the game I saw in the original, like 2018, 2017 at E3.
Actual lifetime ago.
Yeah, like the promises, the sorts of like mechanics and things that CD Projekt Red was advertising then that sadly didn't make it into the launch game, because like, hey, game development is tricky, and you know, you can set yourself goals and not necessarily reach them, but like, it's cool that they took the time to get there. And I'm keen to see this game through now and hopefully play through the Phantom Liberty as well when it comes out, because apparently the story there is fantastic. So,
get your boy Idris Elba, which is pretty cool.
I'm keen to keep going.
Yeah. So from our side, I have not played 2.0. But I'm very keen.
You finished the base game though, didn't
you? I finished the base game. I was part of the group where I enjoyed Cyberpunk. I had minimal issues playing it. So I had a great time. But it's funny because I played it, I mean, when did it launch? It is like 2-3 years ago now.
2020?
That sounds about right.
Or was it 2021?
I think it was 2021 maybe. It was, that is like a lifetime ago, actually, when I think about it. It might have been at the end of 2020.
Let's see. 2020, yeah.
Yeah, it was like, remember, it was November, December, I think, it was right at the end of the year.
Yeah, it was like November. It was very far back, yeah.
So I played the game back then. I enjoyed it, but that's nearly 3 years ago now. And I completely understand CD Projekt Red going, hey, you should replay the game. And I'd love to. But I don't know if I will have the time to, you know, do everything again. So I'm very curious to see how they onboard. Like, I'm definitely not alone. I'm sure there are other people who also just want to go dip in for the expansion and dip out again. So I want to know how do they bridge that gap for people like me? Like, because a lot's changed in the last near 3 years now, where it's 2.0. Like you've said, they've redone a lot. Like, there's a lot of work that's gone into this. So what do I get to re-roll my character? You know what I mean? Like, how do they address the perks and that sort of stuff? And also, for people like me, how do they remind me how to play the game? Like, I always think back now to Horizon Forbidden West expansion. I was like, oh, can't wait to play this game. Played so much Horizon Forbidden West. Launched into it, I was like, I can't remember how to do anything in this game.
Yeah.
I don't remember what bows I have, what all the elements do. I can't remember which combination of keys I must push to do certain things. And Cyberpunk is that, but like more in a lot of ways where there's a lot more layers to dive into. And I don't know if there will be an onboarding thing. Like, maybe I must just replay the game to get my head around it. That whole spiel said, like, I'm very keen to see the expansion. Again, like, I love the base game. I had a great time playing it. And I can tell you, like, Cyberpunk's had such a redemption. I mean, for those of you who might have forgotten, it launched in a terrible state. It was like huge backlash from many gamers. And I know a lot of people since then who've picked up the game and like replayed it. I mean, you and I know Kervin and Miklas, for example, them two alone. I know three people in my office who played the game probably like a year ago in a better state, and they absolutely loved it. So at the time, I think CD Projekt Red did some bad things, but I take off my hat to them that they've like carried on supporting this game. I think they've done good work to earn back the trust of gamers, because remember, like, writing off the hype of Witcher 3 and the goodwill they had, they really shook a lot of gamers. Like, ooh, like, what are you doing, CD Projekt Red? Launching on PS4 and Xbox in the States, et cetera, et cetera. Very, very keen to see what they've been up to, because it's been 3 years. I'm sure a lot has changed. My poor PC is going to melt.
Weird that they launched at the same time as the new consoles. Like,
they did.
Literally
at
the same
time. Was,
yeah,
it was that time. And that's, I think, where a lot of the backlash came from, is that, which, it's like such a gray / tricky area, because like, yeah, the PS4 and the Xbox One aren't as strong, but then like, why did you launch games on those platforms in their poor states? Like, I don't know.
I think it was a real catch-22. Like, they were very ambitious with what they were trying to do, at least from a technical standpoint.
Yeah.
But then like the business reality, like the complete other side of that studio is like, well, listen, that's all well and good, but we cannot just launch on these consoles that literally haven't sold anything yet.
Exactly.
You know, like, you have to launch on the consoles where we will make money. And, you know, looking back, that was probably a good call, irrespective of the issues they had with those consoles, you know, it being pulled from sale and whatever, because like, look how long it took for those consoles supply wise to like stabilize. Yeah. Like, if they were just on those consoles, they would have been in huge trouble.
Yeah.
For a brand new IP and for a company that is publicly traded, you can't like go into a corner and be like, okay, well, we sold like hardly anything, but it's like, that doesn't work like that. Yeah. You know?
Well,
so
Cyberpunk 2.0, Phantom Liberty's out next week. I think it's the
next week. Yeah.
26th or 27th of September.
And
very keen to play it when I somehow have time to play it, because we've got Mortal Kombat Lies of P, which neither of us has touched.
Desperately want to get
kicking
going
around
on
Game Pass, and I'm dying to play it.
And we are knocking on the door of October, so it is just
Starfield.
Assassin's
I've
Creed,
barely touched Starfield.
Super Mario.
Oh my God, that's too much.
What else is on the 20th? Spider-Man 2.
Spider-Man 2. There's a lot. There's a lot happening.
Yeah, it's a lot happening. Alan Wake 2.
Alan, that's like four games. Four games in 1 month.
In October. Bangers.
Oh
yeah.
My God. What a year. What a year this has been.
What a good problem to have.
Yeah, like, woe is me. I've got too much to play.
Woe is me. Yeah, I have so much good stuff to play. Oh.
Like, well, which of these excellent games am I going to play first? Man, my life is so hard. But yeah, that's all we've been playing. I won't talk about it this week, but I have been playing Monster Hunter Go, the mobile game.
Oh, the Niantic one. Okay.
It's real good. I'll talk about it next week.
Oh, really? Interesting.
I'm enjoying it. I mean, again, though, it's like early days, so I'll let you know if I've hit any walls or any frustrations.
I'm quite surprised to hear that, though, so that's cool.
Real good. But I'll do a proper deep dive next week when I've put more time into it. Cool. Shall we get on to game releases this week?
Indeed. We are looking at game releases from Monday the 25th to Friday the 29th, the end of September. I'm looking at a list from GameSpot now because VG247 keeps being out of date. So quite a few games. Some good ones as well. So first up, we've got Lunar Lux coming to PC September 25th. El Paso Elsewhere coming to Xbox Series X, Xbox One, and PC September 26th. My review for this will be up on GameSpot next week. Hey.
Wink, wink.
That's all I'll say. Cyberpunk 2077 Phantom Liberty, as we're saying, September 26th. Remember, this is only a current-gen expansion. It's not coming to the older consoles. Mm-hmm. Yeah. PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. Minico's Night Market, coming to Switch and PC, September 26th. Mm-hmm. My Time at Sandrock. Is this like a My Time at Porsche thing?
I think it's, like a spiritual sequel / successor to that.
I really didn't like My Time at Porsche. And I feel like I'm like one of the few. But it is. It's the same. It's the same people. Cool.
Nice.
Truck Driver, The American Dream. Okay. The PS5, Xbox Series X and S. The American Dream. Jeez. Nice. Diluvian Ultra, Chapter 1.
Nice.
If we're going to name you something Chapter 1, you better make sure it's fucking memorable. Diluvian Ultra is not that. PC, September 28th. Disney Speedster. I thought this game came out.
I also thought it came out. Maybe.
This is the Mario Kart, but Disney, right?
Yeah.
Like, I thought this was out like months ago. Okay. Well,
it was an early PC, access.
Probably. PlayStation, Xbox, new and old, and Switch, September 28th. Wild Mender.
Mm-hmm.
Cool name. PC, PS5, Xbox Series X and S, PC, September 28th. Wow, this is a name.
Good God.
Infinity Strash, not Stash, Strash. I don't know what that means. : Dragon Quest. / The Adventures of Dai.
Nice. Love to see it. I'll play that.
You got anything for me? What is this, a Dragon Quest game?
I mean, it's got Dragon Quest in the name. I imagine it is a spin-off or something in that franchise. Don't know.
Okay. PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X and S, PC, September 28th. And then last game is a mobile one, Cypher 007, coming to Apple Arcade. It's a James Bond game on Apple Arcade.
Oh, I was going to say, cool. Is the 007 James Bond? Surely it must be.
Pretty sure those three numerics are trademarked to hell and back.
Probably. Well, that means we're moving on to news. We're doing well with time this week. Damn, we're so early. What would you like to start with?
I guess should we... This might be the last update ever on this, so this will be good. Microsoft Blizzard. This probably won't be the last update on this.
That's probably not.
So a few weeks ago, Microsoft won the injunction against the FTC was filing an injunction against Microsoft to prevent them from closing the deal. They lost, and this quickly triggered like some action between Microsoft and the CMA, who were the only regulatory board that had denied the deal to kind of like go back to the negotiating table, because I think the CMA was now very worried at the prospect of Microsoft just closing the deal, although apparently that was a big bluff by Microsoft. But either way, it worked, and the CMA and Microsoft chatted, and the results of that was Microsoft saying they would give control of their streaming business to Ubisoft in the UK to appease any sort of anti-competition concerns. And the CMA said, cool, this means we're going to have to relook at the deal, and it's going to take until like October 18th. And week, the CMA released a press release basically saying that they had identified limited residual concerns and that they had provisionally approved the acquisition. what happens now is that they open the floor to like third parties and the public to voice any concerns, and then they listen to concerns and take those into consideration. So this in no means is like a, this isn't confirmed, but like this is pretty much 95% of the way there. Like the CMA themselves are saying, we are happy now with the deal, which was not the case prior. So yeah, it says, yeah, the CMA will now, quote, consult on the remedies over the next 2 weeks until October 6th before it announces its final decision, which is meant to come out before October 18th.
Wow, wow.
So this deal could fucking close by the end of the year. Thank
God. I mean, it's been like 45 years.
Yeah, it's just... Also, if you're someone interested only in this purely from the idea of what arrives on Game Pass, like I've seen a lot of people asking reporters specifically who are reporting on this, like, what does this mean immediately for Game Pass? Nothing. Like,
yeah.
Phil Spencer has said previously, like, it will take months for things to filter down content-wise.
The deal signed, get Call of Duty on there immediately.
It's literally, they're not just fucking ready to go with Call of Duty and like Crash Bandicoot on Game Pass.
Push the Call of Duty button. The deal signed. Yeah.
Get Modern Warfare on Game Pass. And as far as I know, it won't affect Call of Duty at least this year and next year. I think PlayStation still has a deal in place that prevents it from going on Game Pass at the very least. So yeah, that's not going to change soon either. I might be wrong about next year though. I don't know. It might just be this year anyway. But yeah, definitely this year will not be on Game Pass, irrespective of whether this closes before it's out or not. So yeah.
Well, keeping in Microsoft news, shall we talk about the week that was Microsoft leaking all of the things?
Yeah, Microsoft leaking their own things, apparently so.
Because this also came from the deal, right? Somebody uploaded the wrong file. Or, I don't know, a whole story, basically. But yeah.
Basically a gigantic leak of unredacted documents that were sent to the FTC or the Federal Trade Commission. They were accidentally uploaded online, or at least the unredacted versions were uploaded online. It seems like the means of uploading was correct. It was just the wrong files were put there, and it was very quickly identified that Microsoft was at fault, so they can't really go after anyone. But boy, did it give a real insight into like Microsoft as a whole over the past like couple of years, especially with regards to the Xbox business. So Kotaku has so usefully collected most of the big things from there. So let's just go through them real quick. Microsoft considered buying Nintendo. So this is not necessarily true. A lot of how this email, because it comes from an email, reads is like Phil Spencer was asked about whether they should look at acquiring Microsoft, and his answer was a very like candid no, but in a way that is like, this is some of the challenges that would be presented with acquiring a Nintendo. This doesn't mean Microsoft is actively pursuing this, but at the same time, it also doesn't mean that Microsoft wouldn't consider this given the correct circumstances, which is kind of what Spencer says. He's like, the market needs to be right for this sort of move to take place, and that is not right now. So of course, like, do you think PlayStation's not looking at the same thing? Of course they are. Like, everyone's looking at everyone else for a way to increase shareholder value.
Show me
but
the email.
People took this as a like Microsoft is actively looking to buy Nintendo tomorrow, and it's like, no. Super not what's happening.
They've worth $69 billion for Activision. How much do you think a Nintendo would cost?
I guess it all depends on their share price because they publicly traded. So I think it'd
still be some big mola. Good Lord.
I don't know what, like, how many shares they've issued. So, like, would they be more than an Activision? Maybe.
In my head, I think so, but I don't actually know. But yeah. Bethesda might be working on an Oblivion remaster.
That's cool.
Which is cool.
Yeah, there was a whole roadmap of like Bethesda games that are meant to come out. I think a lot of this came through on the like sort of documentation that was provided to Microsoft when they were acquiring Bethesda, like what Bethesda would deliver over a number of years. And they're already far behind on those expectations. Like Starfield is meant to come out last financial year, which I guess was true at some point. Yeah. But on that list were a bunch of sequels and unannounced projects, such as a sequel to Ghostwire Tokyo, Dishonored 3, remasters of Fallout 3, and The Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion. I personally would take a Fallout 3 remaster any day. I'd be very happy with that. Dishonored 3 as well. I'd be very stoked for that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people saw Dishonored 3 are like, interesting.
I don't think anyone is clamoring for a Ghostwire Tokyo sequel.
Look, I'm not clamoring for a sequel, but I do think that the sequel would definitely be better than the base game. I think there's a lot that could learn. I mean, it would
struggle to be worse.
Wow. Damn.
I really don't like that game. I think it's so boring.
Good God. Cool, let's just fly through this. Spencer, AAA game publishers lost their mojo. He stated that AAA publishers were slow to react to the disruption of digital storefronts like Steam and the shops built into Xbox and PlayStation. Okay.
Yeah, after losing the advantage of highly exclusive access to consumer in brick-and-mortar stores, they have not found a way to effectively cross-promote. They have not found a way to build publisher brands that drive consumer affinity the way Disney has in video. I think he's completely correct. Like, I think what they've done is just sink a lot of money into singular projects in a means to make that the next big franchise. Like, you only have to look at Ubisoft for this.
Yeah.
Ubisoft has put all of its eggs into the Assassin's Creed basket. And for the last decade have been floundering on what to do with all of their properties. So, yeah, I think Phil Spencer's completely correct. And, you know, the digital age is kind of like whacked big publishers for six. Activision would not be in a position where they needed to sell if this wasn't true.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's crazy. Microsoft expected a Red Dead Redemption 2 next-gen refresh.
In 2022, but it didn't happen.
Shock.
Guess they guessed.
This is an interesting one. 3/4 of Xbox gamers had a Series S.
That's huge.
Which is huge, yeah. That's way higher than I thought it would be. I mean, I knew the Series S was like, it's almost like a no-brainer. If you know, you either entering gaming or looking to jump to next gen, I mean, it's a lot more affordable than an Xbox Series X. But I did not expect it to be that percentage of them sold, which explains, I guess, why. Because like, I look at the 1 terabyte version now that's just launched or launching. Is it out? I don't actually know. And I think like, but why? Well, now I know why. Because they've sold a lot of them. Yeah, it's interesting.
It seems that according to Kotaku, a more recent data suggests that the split is more 50-50 yeah. now. But still, that's huge.
That's still like high, yeah.
I remember when Baldur's Gate 3 was big now, people were saying, well, they just need to drop parity. This is, like you said, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't. So, yeah, like this half, is a headache that Microsoft will need to solve.
Yeah, like if you look at it as a raw number, it's the half your Xbox audience are on the mid-gen console.
And you can't say like, cool, now you're going to get half the game.
No.
You know, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah. So you mentioned Baldur's Gate 3 and this headline, Microsoft dramatically underestimated Baldur's Gate 3.
This is also another weird one because it's like, there's been a lot of discussion on what the wording actually means. Yes, some take it to mean this, like Microsoft underestimated them and estimated that they would only have to pay a very low amount to get the game on Game Pass by describing it as second run Stadia PC RPG. Others later on have come to suggest that second run actually just means it was going to launch on Stadia after PC and Microsoft that's what they were describing as second run, not that they were describing the game's like inherent value. So I don't know. A lot of these things are without context, but the Larian's director of publishing tweeted out, Microsoft were not the only ones to like underestimate Baldur's Gate 3. So
I just love
makes sense.
They go on to say there just isn't any existing data that could have told anyone how Baldur's Gate 3 was going to perform. We just had to take giant spooky leaps.
I mean, anyone coming out of the woodwork being like, oh, how could they have not seen this was going to be a gigantic game? Please tell me where you until the game launched, no one knew that.
No.
Literally no one could have told you like the impact it would have had. And even if you look back like this guy from Larian says, like you look back at Divinity Original Sin 2, same thing. Like there's no indication that the jump from that to Baldur's Gate 3 would have been this
big.
So,
Yeah.
Phil Spencer wasn't impressed by the PS5 reveal. He basically just says that the Xbox is a better product than what Sony has, not just on a hardware, but equally important on the software platform and services. We have the ingredients of a winning plan. Today was a good day for us. That was on the day of the PS5 reveal. Obviously, I guess since then, Phil Spencer has come out to say that losing the previous gen was the worst thing that could have happened because I guess he underestimated the pull of staying on the same digital library.
Yeah.
And now the hardware doesn't necessarily matter as much.
Yeah. This one makes me laugh. Microsoft accidentally got an exclusive Sega game. I mean, I didn't know. This is so interesting. So as the next-gen consoles launched in 2020, fans of Sega's long-running Yakuza series were surprised that its latest entry, Like a Dragon, was available on Xbox Series X and S, but not PlayStation 5. And the Yakuza franchise has been long associated with PlayStation. So the leak revealed that Microsoft was just as surprised, and it turns out the reason for Like a Dragon landing on Xbox first was due to two competing regional exclusivity agreements Sega made competing regional exclusivity agreements Sega made essentially short-circuited each other. The result, Xbox players ate well while PlayStation fans wept into their dual senses. I mean, good God.
Business is weird, man. Sometimes
that's
you just
so funny.
Yeah, so weird. Because it was weird. Like Yakuza was a PlayStation thing.
Yeah,
For so long, and now it's now you saw during the week during the TGS showcase for Xbox, like a Dragon Gaiden is coming to Xbox Game Pass day one. Mm-hmm. And I think the Like a Dragon sequel's coming to Xbox. Also day one next year. It's not like an exclusive to PlayStation for any given time. So yeah, they've done well.
Good on
them. Now we're getting into things that may or may not ever happen because like these sorts of things are old and not necessarily, you know, confirmations that we will get this, but there's a new Xbox Series X console that apparently might go all digital in 2024. Leaked data indicates that the possible hardware refresh will include more internal storage, faster Wi-Fi, reduced power, and a more immersive controller. It looks like a cylinder, which is super, super weird. and that's down to like using less plastic and, you know, recyclable packaging, blah, blah, blah. Also no disk drive. So yeah, that's a thing. Along with the new controller, there's a new controller that Microsoft calls the it's codenamed Sebel. Shows a two-tone design, modular thumbsticks, features that many PlayStation fans have known for years, like to lift to wake up, precision haptic feedback, and an accelerometer. So gyro support and better haptics.
Nice.
So yeah, that's cool, I guess. And then the last one was Microsoft's comments on their next Xbox for 2028. They see it as a hybrid machine, not a Switch, but basically a home console and cloud streaming device is what they define as hybrid. And they plan to leverage the power of clients and cloud to deliver deep immersion and entirely new classes of gameplay, also powered by AI. So yeah, sounds interesting. There's a big deep dive into this by Digital Foundry on Eurogamer, specifically the plans for the 2028 console. So if you're more interested in that, you should go read up on that. They did like, you know, they actually spoke about what tech could power this and what it could mean and blah, blah, blah.
Well, there we go.
Big embarrassing leak for Microsoft. I think they basically came out and said, a lot of this stuff is outdated. Please don't take it as a gospel. Look forward to plans in the near future, which is pretty much all they could say after this.
Yeah. Cool. Other pieces of news. This was a big week in interesting things. So this happened at the beginning of the week. Unity announces significant changes to its controversial new pricing plan. It did happen at the beginning of this week, or was it end of last week maybe? Because
the changes now were literally last night.
Well, there you go. I don't know, you're probably better versed at explaining what happened here with Unity changing their stance on payments and all sorts of developer side stuff.
It was a lot.
Just break it down.
It was a lot. The core of it was basically this idea of this Unity runtime fee. So Unity as an engine, as a product model, doesn't take royalties, like a percentage of royalties from games. It's kind of like the thing it has always done counter to Unreal, and why like a lot of indie devs have gone to it, because it makes more sense financially for them. They buy the software and that is it.
Yeah.
But now basically Unity, what they try to do was retroactively change their terms of service and basically be like, anyone using any version of Unity is now beholden to this Unity runtime fee, which means that per install of a game and on top of your existing license subscription, you will need to pay us money. So if you reach a certain threshold of installs or revenue, you will have to pay us a percentage back from that based on how many people have installed and played your game. Now, this threw up a lot of questions like, what happens if someone uninstalls and reinstalls my game? Mm. What happens to free-to-play games where installation is kind of the purpose? What happens to games offered through charity bundles, Humble Bundle, blah, blah, blah? Mm. How is this monitored? How is this audited? How is the system prevented from being abused?
If
someone really doesn't like your game,
they
can enact a mass install campaign. Oh, you know, it's like stuff developers are asking.
Mass install it.
these are the sort of questions developers are asking. And the first response from Unity was like really, really poor. It kind of just described, like, they said, oh, we have this black box software that will detect installs for a certain game. Also, you cannot audit the figures that we find. Also, we cannot tell you how it works. And it was like, what? Like, it just didn't make sense. So there's been a lot of backlash from this, like people being like, we're going to delete our games. I mean, the Cult of the Lamb devs were like, oh, we're deleting our games from purchase on January 1st because we can't afford to, you know, run into issues with this. Mm. A lot of devs being like, well, I'm moving to, I think it's Godot or Godot, a new engine that's very similar to Unity. Or some people being like, well, we're going to move to Unreal.
Sure.
Anyway, so Unity last night announced that they will no longer be charging per install runtime fees for any developer using the Unity Personal or Unity Plus versions of their engine, so not like enterprise versions. Mm. A nice little bonus is that those versions of the engines always had to display the Unity splash screen in front of their game. They no longer have to, which is cool.
Nice.
They will still charge the Unity Pro and Enterprise users, but across two key thresholds. They need to cross $1 million in gross revenue trailing 12 months. So that's a rolling 12-month period of $1 million gross revenue. And they have to reach 1 million initial engagements, which presumably means installs. So 1 million installs and $1 million rolling revenue. And then they will only take 2.5% of the game's monthly gross revenue, and that will be self-reported by the developer, which makes fuck all sense to me. I don't understand how they expect the system to work when the developer is meant to self-report installs and gross revenue.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, this will only be for people who choose to upgrade to the new version of Unity in 2024, which will have its own new terms of service, and they will no longer be trying to retroactively apply this to the terms of service across all the other versions prior to this, which is kind of like the really big issue. So, I mean, some devs are still not happy about this, and I get that. I think Unity has irreparably nuked their reputation with developers for trying this. Because, you know, companies do this all the time. They try to get away with something, they hear feedback, and they pull it back to a point where they were kind of already happy.
Mm.
You know, they just try and get away with as much as they can first to see what they...
Yeah.
But it's tarnished their the faith for some devs. I just think this allows a lot of developers who are like 2, 3, 4 years into a project to at least remain on whatever version they're on, release the game, and then make a decision. Yeah. And not have to worry about now, like, revenue-wise, how to deal with this retroactively.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I think Unity fucked up here, and John Riccitiello can get fucked. So, yeah.
Well, there you have it. Cool. Last pieces of news. I did not know this. Ubisoft announces the Division 3, adding to its pile of unreleased Division games.
Well, if you missed a tweet, you probably would. I only saw this in a tweet. It was such a weird way for a game to be announced.
That is very weird, because the Division is not a small franchise. I know many people who play and love the Division.
Yeah. Ubisoft just buried it in a press release, and they were like, Division 3 is also as part of our plans. It's like, what? Yeah. Hello? yeah, I don't know. I think this is a very early project. Apparently, Ubisoft is still building a team for Division 3. It will once again be developed by Massive Entertainment. The lead behind that is the same person who's working on Star Wars Outlaws. So, yeah, I don't expect Division 3 to really appear properly until that game is out and done. But it is weird. Like, exactly. Like, all the big flashy trailers for Division 3 that we used to get at E3, and now it's just like a footnote in a press release.
Yeah.
It's very strange. That very, is very, very strange.
Who knows? That's so weird. Someone managed to beat Zelda Tears of the Kingdom without visiting the surface.
I would like you to tell me how this is possible.
I don't know. I don't know. I haven't finished the game. Hold on. Someone managed to beat without visiting the surface. How? Oh, so maybe...
Without the help of the paraglider, without the completed map.
Hang on, so I'm just reading. Black_hand_got_hard said they completed the run because they, quote, smoked a little too much Sunderlion and got a, at the time, brilliant idea. What the hell? Okay, well, I don't want to read too much into this because I haven't finished the game, but I can't quite understand how this works.
So it shows maps for the depths in the Sky Islands unlocked, but no map for the surface.
But so I'm just
the run relied heavily on navigating the Sky Islands using floating above the surface by using Zonar technology.
So I was just going to say, so if we think about it, I'm not reading this article for spoiler reasons, so forgive me. If you're interested, you can look it up. It's literally titled on Polygon, what I said earlier. Someone managed to beat Zelda Tears of the Kingdom without visiting the surface. So when you start the game, you start on the Sky Island, right? So I think plausibly, okay, you could jump off that island and go down into a chasm. But you said that they don't use a paraglider at all.
Yeah.
So
they use a lot
sense.
Of wing devices and motorbikes to get around, apparently.
But then you've got I'm assuming they do the tutorial, like tutorial island. They get ascend and other abilities. So maybe you run around in the surface and you ascend to certain spots, but you'll still need to get to the surface then. It doesn't make any sense. I need to bookmark this and come back in like 3 months. So the only reason I'm not going to is because it says this post may contain spoilers. I'm like, I don't want
to. I get it. And there's nothing really here. It's kind of nuts. Like, he kind of just made his own map from the Sky Islands and created Zonar devices to get around and completed what he could in the sky.
You haven't done the Rito part of the story yet?
Not yet.
No, okay. So he mentions fighting that boss, which I have fought, and he says fighting without a paraglider was difficult. I'm like, how the hell did you fight it without a paraglider?
The beauty of Tears of the Kingdom. God. You can do anything if you put your heart and mind and... smoke sunderlines to it.
Well, there you go. If you're looking for a really good way to play Tears of the Kingdom, you'll need a Switch, but you'll need a Switch with this Nitro deck.
Oh, what a segue. Goddamn.
This is why I own Triple. So you found this review or saw this review earlier this week, and basically it is a handheld dock you can plonk your Switch into. But man, it looks really good. It looks sick. Yeah, sorry, go for it. I'm busy just looking at the picture.
No, it's cool. It's like it's exactly like you said, it's a dock. So you plug your Switch into it and there's like a USB-C port at the bottom, and you actually have to activate Pro Controller wired mode on the Switch for it to communicate, because it uses wired communication, not Bluetooth. So it helps with like latency and stuff, but it's like quite hefty. I've seen a lot of reviews describe this. Oh, sorry. This is called the Nitro Deck.
Yes.
For anyone actually looking for it, by CRKD. And yeah, it's just like a heftier thing, so that if you've got bigger hands and you find yourself cramping when using the Switch, this is more for that. So the buttons are a bit more pronounced. The thumbsticks are Hall effect, so they won't develop drift over time. It's got rumble. Most importantly to me, it still supports gyro, because a lot of these, like, I don't know if you've seen the Hori split pad, you know, that very big chunky thing that slides into the rails of the Switch. It doesn't support gyro. Okay. So it's like, I personally love gyro supporting things like Zelda, where I'm shooting arrows and I can make fine adjustments with the movement of. So this is sort of like something I would be super interested in. It's like $60, which is not terrible.
I just want to add to you saying gyro support. Have you ever tried shooting an arrow in Zelda when you're on the bus?
Oh, it must be impossible.
It's impossible. It's like you're not even moving, and Link's like, oh. Sorry,
I don't even think I'd play that, because like playing games on, like, I used to play games on a train, like, to work, and I had to stop because I used to get crazy motion sick.
Really? No, I don't get motion sick, thankfully.
The idea of like looking at a screen and movement happening in my peripheral fucks with me, but I cannot imagine that.
I'd love the point of view of anyone watching me play, like someone over my shoulder, like, man, this guy's so good at Zelda. What is he doing with his bow? Oh man, worst Zelda playoffs. Yeah. This dock does look really good. And I think the fact that it's $60, I think like who's this? Polygon, they rightfully say, they open the review with, at $80 per set, Nintendo's Joy-Cons for the Switch aren't cheap to replace. And it is it is criminal how expensive a Joy-Con is. Like, I acknowledge the technology and all the features packed into them, but $80 a pair. I mean, in South Africa, what are they now? Like 1,800 rand a pair, which is just like, that is a lot of money. You think a DualSense costs 1,500 rand, an Xbox controller costs 1,500 rand. Those are cheaper. And I mean, those often go on sale. It's not uncommon to find a PS5 DualSense on Take a Lot for like 1,000 rand or 1,200 rand. Feels like the Joy-Cons just never go on sale. So this is a good replacement for anyone suffering from, or anyone who either just wants a really nice upgrade, or anyone who's got Joy-Con drift and they want to fix that. The units, I know audio listeners, you can't see it, but it looks like it makes your Switch just a, like the handheld mode, but to this particular skin they're showing, it's the GameCube skin.
So that's a special edition skin that's slightly more expensive as well. But
just the way it looks, it looks like a GameCube portable, if it were to exist. Like, it's done really well, which is very cool.
It's a super cool accessory, and it fits the original and OLED Switches, and it comes with different like thumbstick nubs. You can have concave or convex ones, which I always love because I like concave ones. It's a really cool, I mean, we are very late in the Switch life cycle, so maybe you're not keen on like picking up a new accessory for it, but like if you just threw away a pair of Joy-Cons, then I would suggest this for sure.
I would love it if, I don't think this would happen, but think of how Nintendo released the OLED and it's the exact same size. Like, it's a smart move, I think, because then all your Joy-Cons are compatible, accessories like this work. How cool would it be if the Switch 2 was, it would never happen, I know, but if the Switch 2 was the exact same size, everything, just upgraded hardware and whatever, it still used the same sort of dimensions, maybe not Joy-Cons, how cool would it be that it's like, no, it's backwards compatible with our old controllers if you wanted whatever.
That would be cool. That'd be super cool.
Would it happen? I don't know.
No.
We're going to kill my dreams like not. This, man. Damn. That's news for this week. All of the Microsoft stuff and a whole lot of other nonsense.
So I guess we're going to move on to questions. If you want to send us questions, you can email us checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us on all of our social channels at Checkpoint Chat.
We have.
I didn't even ask if we had stuff today.
No questions.
Oh, no.
I know. Love to see it.
Wait, really?
We have nothing.
We have nothing from last week?
Nothing from last week.
I'm going to check the email. I don't believe you.
I mean, unless I missed something, but as far as I know, we've got sweet nothing. Yeah, last question on Twitter was like the 1st of September, which was our last episode.
Yeah, nothing on email. I do have this one email. Security alert. We noticed a new sign-in on your Google account on a Windows device.
Where is that located?
It originated from the UK. Oh, no.
It is funny. It is funny getting... You forget the amount of... Well, not you specifically, Alexander, but one forgets the number of accounts / things they have. Because I can tell you, for example, if I log into Twitter or Facebook, I get an email going like, this is weird. We've got to log in from the UK. I'm like, I live here now.
Please, just update, please.
I don't know what to tell you. But I mean, even recovery stuff or just details that that one has that you might not think of. Like, so I've got two Gmail accounts. And the one I use all the time, the one's like a spare. But yesterday I logged in, it was like, your password's incorrect. So I was like, oh, like, that's weird. Let me just reset it. It's been a long time since I've used it. Maybe I've just got the wrong one written down. It's like, we can send your recovery to this number. And it's like, 082. I'm like, I don't have that number anymore.
How do I change this? You cannot change this.
You cannot change this. Yeah, there's a lot of things like that I'm learning. I'm like, oh my God, like I didn't realize how much stuff is tied to like my number or an email address, whatever.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yep.
I'm looking forward to going home and putting in my old SIM card and seeing how much shit I get. We noticed you try to recover your Gmail account.
Oh my God. Do you use a password manager?
No.
Is this just your password manager?
Maybe. I'll never tell you how I keep my passwords because you'll judge me so hard. And I'll never say
it's like pen and paper, isn't it?
Oh no, that would be far better than what I'm doing. That would be safer.
Is it a fucking note on your notes app?
No, of course not. Don't be ridiculous.
It's definitely that. Jesus Christ. You know who else does that? My father, and he's like 60.
Has this man ever lost a password?
Actually, no. He does one better. He keeps them in an Excel spreadsheet that is password protected.
Holy shit, that's genius. I should do that.
No, it's not. It's not.
What if I use a password protector and then that gets hacked?
If someone just opens your notes app.
How would they open my notes app? They'd need my face to unlock my phone.
Doesn't your notes app uploads to iCloud?
No, I don't have iCloud. You see.
What do you mean you don't have iCloud?
I don't have iCloud.
Of course you have an iPhone, you have iCloud.
I mean, I have an account. You're right. I probably do have iCloud, but I don't have like a 5 gig iCloud account. Listen, in my defense, before you judge away, I don't have all my passwords written out. Like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I have it done in a way that only I would know what the password actually is.
My father does the same thing. It's like cryptography.
Tell your father he's a legend. His password management.
I literally have opened it. He's
impeccable.
Like, check this thing, get the password for this. And I'm like, I don't know what any of this means. He's like, the A means this, the well, exclamation means that. I'm like,
there you go.
Need a fucking cipher to and
okay, oh so God. who's laughing now? We don't need your password management apps. It's the best.
Okay.
This gives me so much joy. I need my God, give me 1 second. You can speak shit for
can I just sit here being judgmental for like 30 seconds?
You can be judgmental while I make the perfect meme.
You're making a meme. No, let's just outro this episode. Goodbye. I'm very, very sad that all of Checkpoint Chat could one day be irreparably damaged because Matty left his phone unlocked at a bar.
Perfect. There we go. You ready?
Oh my God. Oh my God.
For those of you who can't see, it's the Arnold Schwarzenegger Predator meme. It's me with one arm, one muscular arm, Alessandra's father with the other muscular arm, and us clenching fists together. Password protection method. Perfect. Love to see it. What an outro. Let's go.
It's been Checkpoint Chat.
I'm so happy right now.
If you're a cybersecurity company, please sponsor us so we can teach this man something. Please, for the love of God.
Oh my goodness. Well, that's it.
This has been episode 234 of Checkpoint Chat. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. Send us questions next time. Now there'll be like at least one.
If you don't send us a question next week, we'll just talk about my password protection method again.
Again, yeah. We are heading into busy season, real busy season now. Mm. So more Mortal Kombat, it's going to be Monster Hunter, it's going to be El Paso elsewhere next week, Payday 3 maybe, and that's all before like the big things start dropping. So Forza Motorsport is the first one in October.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, Lies of P we still have to get to. So there's lots. There's lots. If there's specific ones you want us to take a look at, email us. You know, who knows? Mm. This has been Checkpoint Chat. Thank you so much. Have a delightful week forward, and we will see you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.